you saw previously. So the main thing to remember is nicotinic receptors are ion channels. They're composed of a tetrameric structure. The binding sites for acetylcholine are on the alpha subunits. It's actually kind of where they bridge between two subunits, but both of them are on the alpha. So the neuromuscular junction has like two alpha subunits. When you saw before, again, instead of having one and two, if you think in terms of the NM, these are the neuronal ones, so these are the ones that are in the ganglia, and the NM, in terms of being in the skeletal muscles, where we all end up being confused. So instead of one and two here, we're going to change those to the M and N. So M referring to the neuromuscular junction. And indicating the ganglia. Look at the compounds that are available. Just as a generalization, when you're looking at the compounds, keep in mind that if you block the receptors in your ganglia, you're not going to get a very selective effect. So you're going to see effects on the sympathetic system, as well as the parasympathetic system, so that makes them less useful. We're looking at the compounds that affect the ganglia first. Again, remember, not as therapeutically useful. We can divide these compounds into the depolarizing and non-depolarizing agents. Nicotine is an example that can act as a depolarizing, blocking agent. So if you have too much of the agonist, you get a chance to repolarize. It's responsible for toxicity, but it's not therapeutically useful in effect for nicotine. You have the compounds that are the non-depolarizing competitive antagonists. They're blocking the effect of the acetylcholine. Being competitive, if you have high enough concentrations of acetylcholine, you can displace them. And we have compounds that are non-depolarizing but non-competitive, meaning that acetylcholine won't be able to displace them. Use is hypertension. Again, not drug of choice for first choice for hypertension. We have a lot of other categories of drugs that will be used. Again, mainly because we're going to see too many side effects from the compounds. The idea that the receptors are different in the ganglia versus the neuromuscular junction has been known for a long time. Essentially what they were working with are these compounds that are the bis-trimethylammonium compounds. So they may have two positively charged nitrogens and they're joined by a hydrocarbon chain. The distance between the two nitrogens determine which receptors they interact with. So when the distance was 5 to 6 carbons, those were the compounds that could block the ganglia as competitive blockers. And then when you went up to distances from 9 to 12, you got the effect on the neuromuscular junction. So actions like Ferrari. Not total separation, but enough that they can distinguish between the receptors and it's possible to selectively block one without the other. The compound that's listed here, the hexamethonium, we have 6 carbons. It's not going to be used therapeutically, but again, it can be used to study a ganglionic blockade. Were two compounds that were used therapeutically. I think this one's been discontinued. The main thing with this one is notice it's not a nitrogen that's giving you the plus charge, it's a sulfur. So it's a completely ionized molecule. It's a very short acting compound, only used IV. And as I said, I think it's been discontinued. One compound that's still available is the phenylamine. Again, only for severe hypertension. You get a lot of orthostatic hypotension as a side effect. It's considered to be a dual antagonist, so it has both a competitive and a non-competitive component. So again, you can't reverse all of the effects with acetylcholine. Being a secondary amine, readily absorbed, you know, it can get into the CNS. It's an old compound. They initially started using it back in the 1950s. They have done some studies recently. There was some reported by 2004 using it in the skin patch. They were going to be using it to help people that quit smoking or to decrease the use of alcohol. They initially started out using it for decrease in smoking. It wasn't as effective there, but it decreased craving for alcohol. Can get into the CNS, so if we think what's happening there is in the CNS, it's decreasing the release of dopamine, so that's decreasing the addiction to alcohol or to smoking. We haven't seen recent studies, so we don't know if they're on the market or not. And again, as a antihypertensive, not very commonly used. Question on the effect of urinary pH on the excretion. Thank you. blocking the action of the silicone and the number of implants. These will be used like during surgery, trying to get relaxing of the skeletal muscles. Or they had neuromuscular blocking agents, they had to use relatively high doses of things like the general anesthetics. So by using the combination, you can use less of the general anesthetic. You can use it for orthopedic procedures, relax the muscles. And they also use it, I've got it just like they're putting that tray tube in here, but you can also use them for somebody that's on a ventilator in the intensive care unit where they're breathing mechanically. One thing that's important with the compounds is they're not affecting the consciousness of a person, so the person's not sleeping, they're just the neuromuscular blocking agent. They don't feel any pain. The importance of that is if a person's under the influence of the neuromuscular blocking agent, they can't respond. So they've had a few unfortunate situations where they used to like the surgery, okay, the person's muscles are relaxed, but the person wasn't actually asleep. So, the person can't respond, they're under the effect. Compounds we'll be looking at are very bulky. So, we're going to be administering an IV, and we don't have to worry about the barrier, we don't have to deal with the cyanide and across the barrier, and get into the neuromuscular junction. They all have at least one quaternary nitrogen present. We divide the compounds into two categories. You're depolarizing and non-depolarizing. The non-depolarizing essentially prevents the effect of the acetylcholine, so the membrane doesn't become depolarized. The depolarizing produces an effect similar to what acetylcholine would with larger doses, and when you get desensitization, you can't repolarize, so you can't have another contraction. Mechanism will be important when we look at trying to reverse the effects. We can reverse the non-depolarizing by increasing the amount of acetylcholine. These compounds are all interacting with both the binding sites for acetylcholine, so they bridge the two binding sites. So the binding sites are on the alpha subunits, so the drugs are going to expand. Interact with both of them. When we look at the size of the molecules, the non-depolarizing compounds are going to be very bulky compounds. A lot of times they can be referred to as being tacky, like an elephant sitting on top of the receptor. If they're sitting on top of the receptor, a acetylcholine can't come in and interact with it. The depolarizing compounds are going to be long skinny molecules. Sometimes they refer to them as being like lepto, like a snake. So they bridge in two sites, which are not bulky. Decamethylene was not used commercially. Yeah, it was one of the first ones where they showed you could get compounds that were selected for the neuromuscular junction as opposed to the ganglia. So you've got your two positive charges separated by 10 carbons. It's an example of a depolarizing type. So again, long skinny molecules in terms of depolarizing. The fact that you got the activity with the two positive charges led to the idea that the nicotinic receptor had two binding sites for the acetylcholine. The one compound that's available is the succinylcholine. It's like two acetylcholine molecules joined together. So if you put the molecule here, you've got acetylcholine on both sides, just joined together. You have two ester groups in the molecule, similar to what you would have with acetylcholine, so you might expect it's a short-acting compound. It's the shortest acting compound that we have. The general recovery will occur in 6 to 8 minutes. If a person's been on an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor, like the ophthalmic products, You've inhibited the enzyme that's present in the plasma, and that will inhibit the hydrolysis of the compound, so you'll have a longer duration. We don't use the acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. Reverse the effect. We don't have an antidote. It will be used when you want only a short duration, so like when they're putting in a train tube or some type of an endoscopic procedure, when you only want to have short duration of the neuromuscular blockade. Here's a CPS question.
Primarily, it's all undergoing metabolism.
in general, compounds that have fairly high molecular weight can also be excreted in the bile. Notice that very little of the compound ends up being metabolized. This change in the structure, again, they didn't identify that until in the 1970s, the actual correct structure of the molecule. If this is information that's listed on the table that's in the end, when we get into the non-depolarizing compounds and fit into two categories, enzymes with polymer type of structures, the aromatic ring and the second 6-member ring of the nitrogen, the other group will be steroid compounds. When you look at side effects, one of the reasons tubuprar isn't used very much anymore is it's the most potent of the compounds as far as causing the release of histamine. It can also cause tachycardia and cause some ganglionic blockade. So net effect is, it was the first one when we knew the action, but it's going to be rarely used therapeutically. Compound with the quaternary nitrogens, the both, and then the also methylated the, you notice here you have phenolic group, here you have a phenolic group, the next compound is that they're methylated. So you just took tubuprarate and added the methyl groups. By doing that, it's about 4 times more potent. Most of it ends up being excreted through the kidney. It's not as bad as causing histamine, but again, it's not commonly used. So these are your two chemical classes. The tetrahydrocarbon indicates that the second ring is an aromatic.
Compound is more potent than the tubuprarate, but
2.5 times more potent. And this one we should be able to answer. Just because a compound isn't active as a neuromuscular block, doesn't mean it's not important. If you notice this flavanosine, it's a tertiary amine. So this is a compound that's going to be able to get into the CNS. And I've added a couple statements to this slide. So, tertiary amine. Across the blood-brain barrier, and it's metabolized rather slowly. So the importance of that is it can accumulate if you administer large doses of the compound. If you're using a compound normally, like in surgery, the metabolite doesn't accumulate in enough concentration to produce an effect. This isn't a compound that you would use, like if somebody is on a ventilator and you want the neuromuscular blockade, and you use the ventilator where you're administering the compound for a long period of time. Because when you accumulate the adenosine, it can cause seizures. So it does have activity. Yeah. You're just using it for a shorter operation. You don't have enough of the compound, so it's good for that purpose. Not for long-term use. If you look at the structure of the echinomia, there's actually 10 isomers present. If you can't find 10 isomers, don't feel bad, because I'm not sure I know what all 10 are. But this is an example where they're using only one of the isomers. It's normally present in about 15% of the mixture, but it's more potent than the combination of isomers. Because it's more potent, you use less of the drug, so you have less of the adenosine that's accumulating. Metabolism is identical as far as it's eliminated by the Hawking degradation process, so it doesn't require enzymes, it's a spontaneous reaction. This compound has esters, so it can be metabolized by plasma cholinesterases. So it has the same problem that we had with the succinylcholine. The person can't metabolize succinylcholine, they have the same problem with this compound. So again, it's going to be in 12 minutes, it's like 10 times longer, 128 minutes. With most of the non-depolarizing agents, we can use acetylcholinesterase inhibitors to reverse the effect. Since you're relying on enzymes to hydrolyze this compound, you wouldn't want to use the acetylcholinesterase inhibitors because it'll prevent the metabolism of the compound. Doxycholine, the longer-acting compound, again, can undergo hydrolysis. Again, if you're looking at it, this one doesn't undergo the Hoffman degradation. I don't know that you can easily predict that, but it does have to depend on enzymes for metabolism. Most of it's actually excreted unchanged. So even though you have esters in the molecule, you don't end up utilizing those to a significant extent. Yeah, mixture of isomers, but the ones with the trans conformation are the ones that are the active compounds. So what you need is the proper distance between these two nitrogens to interact with the acetylcholine receptors. And chromium is the first one that we're getting into, that's a steroid. Just as a generalization with these steroid compounds, a lot of times we're going to have esters at the 3 position. It's this position here. This is the 17 position. So you start out with esters, 3 or 17. So you can remove the ester at the 3 position. You can remove one at 17, or you can remove both of them. Just as a generalization, if you just have a hydroxy group in the 3 position, those are generally considered the active metabolites. They're roughly half as active. They work from like 40 to 70% depending on the drug. The references will differ as to when you get into these other metabolites, but generally they consider them to be inactive. Yeah, if you're just using this for a short duration, you don't have enough of the metabolites to be producing much of the effect. Most of it will be due to the parent compound. This is an example where we have one tertiary amine and one quaternary nitrogen. Again, what's important is the distance between the two nitrogens. The only thing they're using the steroid for here is just a skeleton to hold the two nitrogens a proper distance apart. The steroid itself doesn't have any particular function. But again, removing the acetate at the 3 position is active. Again, if you use it for long periods of time and something with your renal function, then it would be good enough for it to be significant. But short-term use for somebody that doesn't have renal failure, you don't have to worry about it. This one, again, although we've got the 3 and 17, most of the metabolism will just be the hydroxyl at the 3 position. Yeah, most of it actually ends up being excreted with our own 4 metabolism. This is a little different in that we actually have 4 nitrogens. Notice the 2 quaternary nitrogens are located a little further apart. We just modified the rings, and in this case it didn't assemble at the 3 position. We got extra oxygen. This is a little different as far as what's making this a quaternary nitrogen. It's going to be just an extra level, but otherwise similar. That one was similar to succinylcholine as far as duration. This one, but because of how the bronchospasm, they discontinued it. The main thing there is it's possible to get the non-depolarizing agents that are short-acting. You know, none of the ones that are marketed are currently considered short-acting. CPS question?
Thank you.
general, when you're looking at reversing the neuromuscular blocking agents, in terms of the non-depolarizing, can be reversed the increasing amount of acetylcholine when you're competitive. The depolarizing, there's actually two phases of the action of the compounds. And Dr. Potter gets into that. But for our purposes, when you're looking at a compound like succinylcholine, think in terms of you wouldn't want to use an acetylcholine esterase inhibitor because you prevent the metabolism of the compound. Friday, we will start the introduction to the adrenergic system. We're kind of going through it with a few steps, so mostly the synthesis of the problem that it's on. That will be the cutoff for the material that's on the exam next Wednesday. We'll look at a couple of cases.